let's start with the Kawhi pitch, because it again, this piece is really good. People should absolutely go read it. Again, up on ESPN, Kevin Arnovitz with us right now. It starts with health, though, right? And it's such a big story, especially right now, with Kevin Durant going down and the idea of who has your best interests at heart. And the Raptors do have Alex McKechnie, and it's been, like, well-documented how good a job he has done this season and how good a job he has done in the past, whether it was with Shaquille O'Neal or others. But if that is your number one pitch, how do you not match that if you're the Clippers by simply saying whatever they did, we'll do the same? And how much, like, we'll find great doctors too. Like, there isn't just one great doctor on the planet.
Well, no, and that will certainly be the Clippers pitch. I mean, I think in some ways, I certainly don't want to underestimate what Alex done. And that was, there's a reason why their training staff and the medical in Toronto is such a big part of the pitch. But I also think it's part of a much more holistic thing. Like, so by the way, there are a lot of teams that have great, great, great medical, but when that McKechnie figure, whoever his equivalent is, goes to the coach says, to hell with that, I'm playing my guy. Or they go to management and say, here's the best information we have. I think what makes Toronto special this season is not just that, you know, Alex McKechnie's gifted at his job. It's the job collectively of everyone to be on the same page. I mean, there's great performance doctors in most teams now. It's just like that. This has kind of become, it's kind of become par for the course. But in fact, I would suggest that if we could ever get inside what happened with Golden State this week and in the past several weeks, what it might be is not necessarily, oh, the training staff made a terrible misdiagnosis or whatever. I suspect there might have been competing agendas and egos and whatever else. Is it possible that maybe the reason things went wrong there, not the bad diagnostics, but maybe just everyone kind of not working toward the same goal, and competing agendas and anxiety and other issues coming into play? I think what's made Toronto such a good organization this year is everyone's on the same page, from Nick Nurse to Bobby Webster to Masai Ujiri to Alex McKechnie, to Manu Ginobili, to, you know, Kawhi Leonard, obviously, first and foremost, and the people who advise him, right? Like, everyone is sort of working in concert. And I think no one knows a lot about Kawhi except the people close to him. But one of the commonalities is he just likes things to be clean, right? Like, that's the thing. There's no friction, no static. You come to the office and there's no agenda setting. Right, he's a low drama, literal guy, and there's not a lot of patience for sort of, you know, internecine agendas. He's a calm, chill Southern California guy.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, maybe that happens in Los Angeles, but he knows it exists in Toronto. He knows that
exactly.
He goes from one of the lowest drama teams to another team. Though, I mean, we've had our drama here with the Raptors, but yeah, no drama at all. Really, this season. I mean, ultimately, Kevin, is there much of an argument to be made against the Raptors if it's anything other than weather and location?
I think there is zero argument to be made. If you wanted to nitpick, you know, you could say, hey, the core is a little old, right? You know, Kyle's in his early, getting to be in, soon to be in his mid-30s and on the book for one more year. You know, Mark is an older player. And, you know, if you wanted to nitpick and just say, okay, if you were looking at the rosters around the league, you know, I mean, the good news is you have Pascal Siakam. And I think Siakam is, assuming that, you know, Kawhi, again, we think that that's important to Kawhi. I mean, obviously he wants to, quote, win. I don't know if he's, I don't, but I've also heard he's not the LeBron, hey, let me look at the roster, kind of, I'm sort of a shadow GM here type. I think but if you wanted to make a case, you could say, a lot of uncertainty. Like, tell me what the Raptors starting lineup is in for the playoffs opening night, April 2021. Can you do it? Oh, is it Kyle Lowry on a big deal as an aging point guard? I'm playing devil's advocate here. Marc Gasol is going to be, you know, 61 years old then. I mean, whatever it is. And Pascal's great. He kind of plays your position. You know, whatever it is, like you could pick around the roster if you wanted to make that a thing. But I think Kawhi is the kind of player who can make other people around him better. And I think Toronto has demonstrated time and again, they're really good at finding undervalued players. I mean, you got Pascal Siakam toward the end of the first round. Probably can do that again. You're going to have cap space if those expensive older guys leave. You'll figure out how to populate the roster with pieces that work. So that would maybe be the only one.
You know, I know you're playing devil's advocate, but it's definitely an important thing to bring up when we are looking at this. And Ben and I have talked about this all year long, but the emergence of Pascal Siakam has been, yeah, I think one of the most important things in terms of the Kawhi Leonard pitch, because you actually do have a tangible piece that you can grow with. You might have someone who can take the load off you defensively, who can provide some secondary scoring, who's an easy guy to deal with. Like, he really does seem like an actual ideal running mate for a guy like Kawhi Leonard. And then the secondary part is, yeah, you trust Masai Ujiri and say, well, look at his track record basically everywhere. You have to believe that he will be able to kind of win between the margins, and that you can trust him to build a competitive roster and to continue to push for a competitive roster. But, yeah, you did have that part of the article where in the pitch you were talking about the roster's professionalism and experience and unselfishness. I think the question would be, if you did keep Kawhi, if he did re-sign, and you say you won even a title, do you necessarily roll back with the same group, or do you use those final years, those expiring contracts of some of these players, to already get started on trying to reinvent yourself?
I have no doubt that the front office in Toronto will look at all available options. I mean, obviously they want to be sensitive. I mean, they've got a championship core. And also, by the way, I really like that team for next year, you know, and, you know, you don't want to so overplan for the future that you forget, oh, you know what, if we're fortunate enough to bring Kawhi back, you know, who you got in the next year's Eastern Conference. I mean, I think I'm penciling in the Raptors as my favorite, particularly, and they may even be able to, you know, finagle enough to get a little help here and there. But I have no doubt that they'll look at opportunities. I mean, again, this is a front office that traded DeMar DeRozan when no one, you know, saw it coming. A guy who is important to sort of the establishing Toronto as a place guys might want to play. So clearly this is not a front office captive by sentiment. Right, they will do whatever is necessary, and if a final, I'm throwing it out there. I imagine if there is a great deal on the somebody whiffs in free agency and says, boy, we really want to bring Kyle Lowry, we need a point guard for 1 year, you know, really, I imagine they will listen to all and you know, incoming calls on that. Though I think coming off of a championship, there's a lot that it would be required to get one of those guys.
Yeah, no, it's true. It would be wild that, yeah, back-to-back seasons you trade DeMar DeRozan and then Kyle Lowry. But,
well, especially if you were coming off of a title.
Yeah, no
with
question.
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He could.
I think it's very improbable. Let me just say this for the audience. I think it's extremely improbable. My point is, by the way, I want a front office. If the front office can make a deal that makes the team better for the next 5 years, mm-hmm. and doesn't cost you much for year one, like, you do it. As difficult as it is, I mean, that's what they've demonstrated. And that's exactly the logic that got them where they are, where we're on the eve of a possible championship, because a team did something that, frankly, other teams might not have had the constitution to do.
Well, I think it's also something that would have to be attractive to Kawhi Leonard, because it seems to pair with his personality. Is that, listen, man, we're not going to let sentiment catch things up here. We're going to do whatever we think is right to win around you for as long as you're here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it goes without saying. Again, you never want, I mean, there's always this tension of how much you defer to a superstar, and it can get a team in trouble and a franchise in trouble. But absolutely, I mean, I think you clearly, you know, there's going to be conversations with Kawhi about, you know, what he values, mm-hmm. and who he values.
Yeah, well, I think it's a very worthwhile discussion, especially considering that Anthony Davis is going to be traded this offseason somewhere, and it's not a conversation that's necessarily relevant in Toronto right now, but we're already seeing reports that Boston's out of it. There's this big piece on Rich Paul about how he's talking about how we're going to free agency no matter what. I wonder, I mean, the conversation we've been having the last couple of days is about how teams reprioritize going after a player that's on the verge of free agency no matter what. How do you think that this applies, what's happening to the Raptors right now?
I think the combination of Paul George last year and Kawhi Leonard this year, now obviously if he stays, it completely even elevates this and compounds this even more. It's funny. We do on the ESPN, they had us kind of throw out a fantasy trade for Davis, and I went with Denver on the grounds that Denver's a very Toronto-esque team, right? They won in excess of 50 games this year. They were the 2 seed, almost like an old Toronto team in the sense that they've got some really interesting young players, and they're probably not good enough to win a championship as currently constituted. Now, maybe that changes if Jamal Murray becomes absolutely, like, makes this enormous leap. I love Murray. I actually picked him as rookie of the year that year at preseason. I mean, I'm a huge fan, but you could argue that Jokic, and I know I'm saying this to couch my Toronto audience here, and I assure you I love Jamal Murray.
That's okay. Speak freely.
But you could argue, hey, so congratulations, Denver. You're looking at a future where you're going to be a conference semifinalist. You're going to be the Memphis Grizzlies circa 2011. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. You could have a nice 50 to 55 win, nice Toronto Raptors 2013 to 18 run. Or what if you could put together a package? What if Gary Harris and your other kind of interesting young players and a trove of picks, and you could get Anthony Davis for 1 year, fully knowing that he's saying, I'm going to walk. I mean, I like Jokic, Davis, and Murray next year in the West. Wow, do I really like that, you know? And if you win, dare them. Okay, you know what? Go to Los Angeles. Leave. We just went to the finals and took the Raptors to seven games or took the Bucks to seven games or whoever it is. And, yeah, go to the Lakers, which are run by a bunch of ridiculous courtiers, you know, and go play with 36-year-old LeBron James during the last 2 years of his career, you know, in an absolute clown show that is that front office. You know, dare him. And I, in some ways, it's the Toronto model. If you could say, hey, look, if we believe we can win with this guy, let's do it. And, you know, maybe he doesn't walk away. Now, I think what Kawhi does will very much, I think, inform the imaginations of front office. Because if the Raptors pull this off, and boy, if they win a title, they've got a really good chance to pull this off and keep him long-term in a place he had no intention of ever playing. It signals to the league, like, maybe you do this if you're in a very good but not great elite team. And just roll the dice. And I think it is going to change the imagination of the front offices everywhere.
No, I love this. It's exactly what we were talking about earlier, is that it just, my example wasn't the Nuggets, it was the Trailblazers. I was saying, if you're the Trailblazers, like, what's stopping you in this situation? Just looking at it and going, okay, let's do whatever we can to get Davis. And let's see if we can get him 1 year here with Damian Lillard. And maybe you do have to throw CJ McCollum in a trade for him or any proposal for him, but something, just try to find a workaround. At least make the call. Like, don't let the other organizations that, you know, if he's just going to be the resigning thing, or the Lakers be the only ones who put a pitch together, the Knicks, and make it a two-horse race. Like, why you wouldn't involve yourself now, it seems a little, it seems riskier to me now. Like, it used to be, oh, well, you can't move all in for a player because there's just too much risk. You can't give up that many assets. But to me, it's like, would you rather be that team, or would you rather look like the Boston Celtics do, where there's all these reports that all it would have taken for you was Jaylen Brown to get Kawhi Leonard last year. Like, I almost feel like that is now becoming the new risk, is in action.
Right. I'm with you, too. I mean, it used to be risk aversion governed the behavior. Now I think it's sort of caution might be the vice in front offices, which obviously makes it a much more fun league. I mean, you want general managers, from our standpoint, I mean, you've got to fill days talking about this stuff, and I get to write. You want GMs to throw some, you know, you would love to see more risk taken. It is interesting. I mean, you know, the funny thing, and it's difficult to talk about because DeMar is such a good guy, but, you know, what few people really talk about is it wasn't just that they gave up a lot to get Kawhi. You could also argue they also got off a salary they wanted to get off of, mm-hmm. you know, and I think when we kind of continue to kind of always look at this trade as being one of the most dramatic and impactful trades in recent NBA history. You know, boy, look, you know, they gave up a franchise player. I think you could also argue, and again, I think one reason we don't talk about it is because we all are so fond of DeMar as a person and as a character. But he was also getting paid a lot of money to be a pretty ineffective postseason player. And you got rid of long-term salary. So even if the Raptors lose Leonard this offseason, you know, they're in a position where they can get some stuff done in the next couple of years, especially around, as you say, Siakam, who is turning into a top 20 player.
Absolutely. And it was why, as callous as it seemed at the time, it was immediately a good trade. It was like, no matter what happens here, the risk of it or the upside of it was immediately worth it for what you moved off of, which was not enough. And even if we look at the Paul George trade, I know Oladipo turned into something great, but it was very unexpected. And at the time, that was a move that even got panned because of the same reasons, right? Which is, well, this guy only has 1 year left on his deal. And same thing with Kawhi, even to a certain extent. Well, he only has 1 year left on his deal. And it feels like there's already this massive market correction with a guy like Davis, who has proven less than Kawhi Leonard ever did, is still an injury-prone player, has still been proven to be a mercurial guy. And that all of a sudden, the asking price is not, like, imagine saying you could get Anthony Davis now for DeMar DeRozan, a late first-round pick, and Jakob Poeltl. It's like, no, we're talking about multiple picks and prospects and a good player. Like, it's already showing you how quickly this has evolved just based on the market of it all. We'd be remiss if we didn't get at least one thought on this series from you. Is it just going to come down to whether the Raptors can slow down one of Clay or Steph, or is it just more about their teammates missing shots? Like, what's your feel heading into Game 6 at Oracle?
I mean, my feel is I still have a lot of confidence in the Raptors. I think they're a really good defensive team. And, it's funny. I watched a lot of those made threes, and they did lose some guys. I mean, I think I haven't seen the Raptors play two questionable defensive games in a row this postseason, and I was with them the whole way. And I'm fairly confident that they can kind of shore up and clean up some of that stuff. The Warriors are still the Warriors, and I have kind of no real rooting interest in this series. I mean, I've become fond of the Raptors, but I also am somebody who loves Durant-less Warriors basketball, just as a scheme. I'm not sorry to see Durant hurt. Obviously, that was terrible. But and I think you saw in the final few minutes of that game just how lethal it is and how just still really good. Like Draymond can change games defensively, and he is one of the best point forwards in the history of the game. And obviously, you have Clay and Steph coming off of those splits, and boy, I mean, Fred has done as well. Fred VanVleet has done as well defensively on Steph as I think. I mean, I'm thinking about like Conley in the years in Memphis. Like, I can't recall a guy who's been more dedicated to the cause, and still Curry gets loose. But they're still a really lethal team. I mean, I think we're actually, after a lot of kind of, there hasn't been a lot of great, I mean, there have been moments of great basketball, but I'm kind of more hopeful than anything that with these sort of uncertainties loosening now, and we kind of know what we have, and there's no, like, you know, is Durant coming back hanging over, that we can see like two really brilliant basketball games. Because I just think that seeing the best Raptors defense and that sort of, primary action with Kawhi sort of getting the ball second in a possession, that sort of Toronto, that kind of team I've gotten to know, up against a Warrior 15-16 era style play is sort of really exciting to me. I mean, I think the Raptors are going to win largely for no other reason than I think it's easier to win one than two. Mm. And that's the advantage they have.
Let's just go with the one. One gloriously played basketball game tomorrow night, and then we can all go to our places of sleep. We can sleep for the off season.
Less anxiety.
Yeah, yeah.
I forget how late the games are for you guys. They're rough.
They are, buddy.